Good evening. The redacted Mueller report is in. We follow the drama as it unfolded. A radical is released from an upstate prison after nearly four decades, and catcalling women, activists say, don't do it. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, April 18th, 2019. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report was revealed to a waiting nation Thursday. The key takeaway is that President Donald Trump tried to seize control of the Russia probe and force Mueller's removal. Trump was, according to the report, thwarted by his own aides and others around him. In one particular dramatic moment, Mueller reported that Trump was so agitated at the special counsel's appointment on May 17, 2017, that he slumped back in his chair and declared, "Oh my God, this is terrible. This is the end of my presidency. I'm effed." With that, Trump set out to save himself. The report's bottom line tracked the findings released in Attorney General William Barr's four-page memo released a month ago. He found there was no collusion with Russia, no clear verdict on obstruction, but it added new layers of detail. The Justice Department released its redacted version of the report about 90 minutes after Barr offered his own final assessment of the findings at a testy Justice Department news conference.
Special counsel's report did not find any evidence that members of the Trump campaign or anyone associated with the campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these hacking operations. In other words, there was no evidence of the Trump campaign collusion with the Russian government's hacking. The special counsel's investigation also examined Russian efforts to publish stolen emails and documents on the internet. The special counsel found that after the GRU disseminated some of the stolen documents to entities that it controlled, DC Leaks and Guccifer II, the GRU transferred some of the stolen materials to WikiLeaks for publication. WikiLeaks then made a series of document dumps. The special counsel also investigated whether any member or affiliate of the Trump campaign encouraged or otherwise played a role in these dissemination efforts. Under applicable law, publication of these types of material would not be criminal unless the publisher also participated in the underlying hacking conspiracy. Here, too, the special counsel's report did not find that any person associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in the dissemination of the materials. Finally, the special counsel investigated a number of links or contacts between the Trump campaign officials and individuals connected with the Russian government during the 2016 presidential campaign. After reviewing these contacts, the special counsel did not find any conspiracy to violate U.S. law involving Russian-linked persons and any persons associated with the Trump campaign. So that's the bottom line. After nearly 2 years of investigation, thousands of subpoenas, hundreds of warrants, and witness interviews, the special counsel confirmed that the Russian government sponsored efforts to illegally interfere with the 2016 presidential election, but did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts. After finding no underlying collusion with Russia, the special counsel's report goes on to consider whether certain actions of the president could amount to obstruction of the special counsel's investigation. As I addressed in my March 24th letter, the special counsel did not make a traditional prosecutorial judgment regarding this allegation. Instead, the report recounts 10 episodes involving the president and discusses potential legal theories for connecting those activities to the elements of an obstruction offense. After carefully reviewing the facts and legal theories outlined in the report and in consultation with the Office of Legal Counsel and other department lawyers, the Deputy Attorney General and I concluded that the evidence developed by the special counsel is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense.
Trump, speaking at a veterans event Thursday morning, expressed relief.
"I'm having a good day, too. It was called No Collusion, No Obstruction." There never was, by the way, and there never will be. And we do have to get to the bottom of these things, I will say. And this should never happen. I say this in front of my friends, wounded warriors, and I just call them warriors because we just shook hands and they look great. They look so good, so beautiful. But I say it in front of my friends, this should never happen to another president again. This hoax, this should never happen to another president again. Thank you.
But House Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler added that the report outlines disturbing evidence that President Trump engaged in obstruction of justice and other misconduct.
Attorney General Barr appears to have shown an unsettling willingness to undermine his own department in order to protect President Trump. Barr's words and actions suggest he has been disingenuous and misleading in saying the president is clear of wrongdoing. Attorney General Barr's letter summarizing the report from March 24th quoted the special counsel report, quote, "While this report does not conclude that the president committed the crime, it also does not exonerate him. He ignored what is in the Mueller report just two sentences before, where the special counsel concluded that, quote, if we had confidence after a thorough investigation of the facts, that the president clearly did not commit obstruction of justice, we would state so. Based on the facts and the applicable legal standards, however, we are unable to reach that judgment. Obviously, this changes the emphasis and meaning of the paragraph, and obviously he didn't include the key sentences. Second, Special Counsel Mueller went on to say that, quote, a thorough FBI investigation would uncover facts about the campaign and the president personally that the president could have understood to be crimes or that would have risen to personal and political concerns, close quote. For some reason, Attorney General Barr excluded this critical finding as well from his version of events. The Attorney General's decision to withhold the full report from Congress is regrettable, but no longer surprising. Barr has so far refused to work with the committee to provide us with information, the kind of information that has been customarily provided in the past and to which the Judiciary Committee is entitled. These concerns and many others will be addressed when Barr testifies before the committee on May 2nd. Even in its incomplete form, however, the Mueller report, incomplete because part of it is redacted, even in its incomplete form, however, the Mueller report outlines disturbing evidence that President Trump engaged in obstruction of justice and other misconduct. Contrary to the Attorney General's statement this morning that the White House, quote, fully cooperated, unquote, with the investigation, the report makes clear that the president refused to be interviewed by the special counsel and refused to provide written answers to follow-up questions. Page 13, Volume 2, makes clear that his associates destroyed evidence relevant to the Russian investigation. Page 10, Volume 1, the report concluded there was substantial evidence, in quotes, that President Trump attempted to prevent an investigation into his campaign and his own conduct. Page 76, page 78, page 90, page 157, Volume 2. That is why I have formally requested that Special Counsel Mueller testify before the House Judiciary Committee as soon as possible so we can get some answers to these critical questions, because we clearly can't believe what Attorney General Barr tells us. Finally, it is clear the Special Counsel's office conducted an incredibly thorough investigation in order to preserve the evidence for future investigators. The Special Counsel made clear that he did not exonerate the president, and the responsibility now falls to Congress to hold the president accountable for his actions. Congress must get the full, unredacted report, along with the underlying evidence uncovered by Special Counsel Mueller. Congress requires this material in order to perform our constitutionally mandated responsibilities. Thank you.
Barr said he wouldn't object to Mueller testifying before the House committee. Trump himself was never questioned in person, but the report's appendix includes 12 pages of his written responses to queries from Mueller's team. Reaction among activists was varied. Some were disappointed but saw potential in the new facts presented in the report, while others criticized Democrats for hanging their case on Russia. Dan Kovalik teaches international human rights at the University of Pittsburgh School of Law. He says the special prosecutor wasted $25 million.
This has all been a tempest in a teapot, and I think Mueller's report shows that. And $25 million later, we have very little to show for this investigation. It's quite a shame. I mean, the one thing it did do is raise the animosity between the United States and Russia, which I believe was the intention of the Russiagate scandal all along. And that's a fallout that I greatly regret.
They're going to bring Mueller in front of the House committee in May. What do you think is going to happen then, and do you think this is going to continue?
The Democrats will try to milk as much as they can from him to support their position that there is something there in terms of alleged Russian interference, and then others are going to really take him on and ask why it took so many years and so much money to come up with nothing, essentially nothing. And I think that's a question all of us should be asking truthfully.
And how about the Mueller finding that there might have been evidence of a cover-up?
I'm certain there probably was some obstruction. I mean, look, I don't think Trump's a good guy. I don't think he's an honest guy. I think he's very corrupt in many ways. And if he's caught on obstruction or other types of corruption, that's fine, you know. But this claim that somehow he's in the tank for Putin has always been ridiculous. In fact, he's backed out of the intermediate range nuclear missile treaty from 1987 that Ronald Reagan signed. He has not capitulated to Russia, as people thought he might. So look, if they go after him on these other things, I'm sure he's very culpable for many other misdealings. And have at him, but don't vilify Russia in the meantime.
Kovalik is author of The Plot to Scapegoat Russia. James Henry is a forensic economist who's been closely following Trump's involvement with Russian organized crime figures. He says Russia didn't have to collude or conspire to help Trump.
The evidence for actual collusion in the technical legal sense is problematic. It requires a conscious conspiracy and actions as well as words. I think they had a hard time showing that the Russians actually sat down with the Trump campaign people and plotted here. Or even in the case of the WikiLeaks thing, they haven't been able to show that Julian Assange was actually working as a Russian agent. He was redistributing DNC emails that somebody hacked and gave to him. So that's probably true. The question about obstruction of justice, I think, is much less clear. And I think Mueller's tactic of trying to get the president to answer interrogatories as a way of doing this was kind of unusual. And
what's an interrogatory?
Interrogatory is just a written set of questions. Originally, he was trying to get the president to sit still for a face-to-face question-and-answer session. I think Giuliani realized that Trump would be disastrous in that in that kind of mode, and Mueller's an experienced prosecutor, so he didn't agree to it. He could have gone to the grand jury and required Trump to testify, but for some reason he backed off. So the obstruction, I think, issues are still out there. More significant issue here, though, I think that Trump really owes his financial career to Russia and the former Soviet Union, and the money pouring out of places like Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan and Russian oligarchs themselves who invested heavily in his properties all over the planet. So that's not really at stake in this investigation. And I think what the ironic thing is that Mueller and his team way back in the late 90s gave a pass and sort of an informant status to a few Russian mobsters who went on to help Donald Trump finance properties like the Trump Soho. So Felix Sater was a well-known guy who got an informant deal from Eastern District of New York and allowed him to go on secretly to raise money for Trump all over the planet. In the long run, I think that actually put Trump back on his feet economically at a time when most banks wouldn't lend to him. So still a lot of stuff out there that needs to be investigated. And Mueller, I think, just ran out of time and energy here after a couple of years. And there's just so many straws in the wind here. We have the Deutsche Bank investigation still going on. We have questions about Cyprus that he never got to the bottom of involving offshore money. So journalists are going to have to carry the ball forward. I think Congress is going to get into election season pretty soon, and it's going to be difficult for the congressional committees to focus on this. So we're kind of witnessing peak Mueller madness right now. I never really expected Mueller to deliver a decisive blow to Trump with this collusion investigation, because when you think about it, Putin really didn't have to collude with anybody to know that it would help if his hackers got hold of these damaging, truthful emails. And that's, you know, that was certainly contributed to Trump's victory. I think it was one of a number of factors. So, you know, that's my bottom line here. I think we need to continue to pay attention to Trump's international allies, and Putin probably has buyer's regret in some way. I mean, Trump has been going around NATO saying, raise your defense spending. You know, that's not likely in Putin's interest. I think he's a mobster. I don't think he's a mole.
Economist James Henry. Mueller wrote that he would have exonerated Trump if he could, but he wasn't able to do that given the evidence he uncovered. And he reiterated the Justice Department's standing opinion that a sitting president couldn't be indicted. Trump's written responses addressed no questions about obstruction of justice, as was part of an agreement with Trump's legal team. He told Mueller he had no recollection of learning in advance about the much scrutinized Trump Tower meeting between the campaign officials and a Russian lawyer. He also said he had no recollection of knowledge about emails setting up the meeting that promised dirt on Hillary Clinton's campaign. And after 35 years in prison, Judith Clark has been granted parole. The New York State Parole Board released Clark after 37 years for a deadly Brinks heist in 1981. The robbery resulted in the death of two police officers and a security guard in Rockland County. The former Weather Underground member was convicted of second-degree murder and robbery for driving the getaway vehicle. Clark, originally sentenced to 75 years to life, transformed into a model prisoner while in jail. She was supported in her bid for freedom by Governor Cuomo. Clark also had the support of the National Organization for Women. Now, as New York State Director is Sonia Osorio, she agrees Judith Clark is a different person.
I feel good about Judith Clark's release. I've had the opportunity to meet her and spend a number of hours with her on a number of occasions. And it's clear that the person she is today does not even resemble the person that she was at this point nearly 40 years ago when she was involved with the Brinks robbery that ended up in a tragedy with three people dying. And she didn't actually pull any trigger. She was a getaway driver, but obviously she has responsibility for that. And she has spent, you know, she has grown up and grown old while in prison. And she has been a mentor and a role model and given guidance to so many women who've come through the Bedford Correctional Facility where she has been since being convicted 38 years ago. I think that this is an example of the criminal justice system working well. She was held accountable. She had a fair trial. She has spent many decades in prison. And she has been redeemed. And she has done very, very good works while in prison. I have no doubt that she's going to be a productive member of society. She has a lot to offer now, and she's ready to do that. We have to see the humanity in everybody, and everybody is supposed to have an opportunity to pay their debt to society and go above and beyond to improve themselves and to help others and to prove that they deserve mercy and deserve an opportunity to have freedom again in their lives. And I think, you know, also no one's really talking about how the New York prison system, in this instance, at Bedford Correctional Facilities, really gave her the platform to do it. There's programs that the inmates are able to propose and create and run and have responsibility with, from the prenatal unit to a program that they have to learn how to train animals, dogs, and train them to be guide dogs for veterans and others. So in many ways, she's been contributing already to the outside world by her participation and leadership in that program, for instance. And I hope that we can do more of this throughout the criminal justice system. We've made a huge strides just recently, right, with a criminal justice reform package that will ensure that just because you don't have the money, you're not sitting in jail, as opposed to someone who has the money to bail themselves out and live free before their next court appearance.
Is this something that now is taking a lot of heat for, and is this sort of outside your bailiwick, or is this a now issue?
Well, you know, we've certainly worked on issues that have to do with incarcerated women, whether it is access to reproductive health products, health care, the treatment of pregnant incarcerated women. Fundamentally, we are human rights activists. So in an effort to further human rights, we do believe in the need for redemption and the need to lower incarceration rates. We believe in hope and inspiration and giving people second chances. Since I had the opportunity to visit Bedford Correctional Facilities, I feel as my job as the president of NOW is I don't represent just free women, but I also represent women who are incarcerated. I've been able to meet many of the women who are incarcerated. There's certainly a high percentage of them who have suffered sexual abuse as children or by their intimate partners somewhere in their life. And for so many of them, it has led to disaster in their lives that have led them to be behind bars.
Have you met or have anything to say to the families of the victims who still feel that justice hasn't been done since she hasn't spent her whole life in prison?
I'm so very sorry for their loss. I, you know, it's a little before my time, this tragedy, but since I did meet Judith, I've been able to actually, you know, I've gone back and I've read about them, and so I've been able in my own way to pay respects to their family and to honor their memory. And this is not easy in any way, shape, or form, because there's nothing that's going to bring back their loved one, of course. The only thing that I could say to them, besides my deep condolences, because they still surely love and miss their loved ones, but I've had the opportunity to spend time with Judith, and I believe 100% that she is a completely transformed person.
Sonia Osorio is New York State Director of the National Organization for Women. And that's some of the news for Thursday, April 18th, 2019. The news was produced with Dylan Hoyer. Our engineer is James Irsay. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for joining us.
Coming up on WBAI, Justice Matters. Stay with us. Coming right up at 6:30.